Do this with authority, not some wimpy little hammer. Good afternoon. This is the Senate Oil and Gas Committee. I'm the chairman, Senator Lauren Lehman. We have present Senator Judy Salo and Senator Bert Sharp. Today's meeting is a work session on Senate Bill 150, Exploration Licensing, for the benefit, perhaps, of those on teleconference in Anchorage, Barrow, and Fairbanks, and for those who did not follow this saga closely, who are here in Juneau with us today. I'll recap briefly the history. We had this bill in the Oil and Gas Committee and did considerable work on it. It went to the Finance Committee, and some changes were made, went to the floor of the Senate, where it was further amended and came two votes short of passage. That's a positive way to look at things. And it now is being held under reconsideration on the Secretary's desk, which is, I guess, our senatorial way of saying it's tabled indefinitely, and we expect to take action on it. Our plan is to bring it back to the floor of the Senate and to offer amendments to it. And during the interim, there was a working group that met and worked at quite some length over a number of issues and came up with a proposed change that, as my understanding, has, I don't know if the correct phrase is universal support, but at least of those who are in the working group, it has broad support for changes, and we're going to hear about those today. And if there are any questions by members of the committee, certainly we'll have an exchange. I'd like to keep this as informal as possible, and yet if at all possible, we can wrap this up in the next hour. That would be my preference. Ken Boyd, the Deputy Director of the Division of Oil and Gas, is with us. And Ken, if you'd like to join us at the table, I'd like you to briefly run through the changes wherever it's convenient for you. The microphone right there is going to pick you up very well. And so if you want to sit there, that would be fine. If you can run through the spreadsheet that has the major changes between, or actually maybe all, I mean, all the changes that you're suggesting and that the working group is suggesting that be made, go ahead. And just so others will know that Senator Adams does work, he has joined us, and thank you for joining us, Senator Adams.
This Republican-led coalition.
Well, I was going to acknowledge that you do have a teleconference site in your district in Barrow that's online. Good. Thanks for joining us. Mr. Boyd.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ken Boyd, and I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Oil and Gas. As you said, between sessions, a number of companies met with the state to try to hammer out some of the differences that arose in various committee hearings last session. As you know, the bill didn't get support from all companies as different provisions were added or subtracted from the bill. And it was our intention to bring everybody to the table and to see what might be crafted that would be acceptable to everybody, and to the extent possible. And I'm talking between 18, 19 companies of all sizes, from one person entrepreneurs to the largest oil companies in the world, sat at the same table and discussed the various provisions of the bill. And through a series of interim work products and lots of words and lots of gnashing of teeth, we came up with what we think is a suitable compromise, which I'll refer to as the October 25th draft. You should all have this little two-page summary that just very, very briefly takes you through the what I would call the major provisions of the exploration licensing bill. And it shows the changes from the original bill as introduced by the governor at the beginning of last session. In fact, the bill had been introduced in the previous session in a different form, but let's just talk about this one. The governor introduced Senate Bill 150, and then the committee substitute that, as Senator Lehman said, now sits on the floor. And then the October 25th draft, which doesn't exist anywhere except in your packets and in my briefcase. Again, it's the document that all the companies have agreed to, and we literally sat around a table and said, you agree to it, do you agree to it, and everybody's head went up and down. So at least we have something to work from. I'd like to start out. Some of you are battle-weary veterans of this bill, and some of you had less exposure, I think, in some of the committee hearings. I think there's two important points to make in general before we get into the specifics. And the most important, I think, is that the exploration licensing bill is not a replacement for the five-year oil and gas leasing program. It's another program. The five-year oil and gas leasing program will continue to go forward. We added exploration licensing as a means to dispose of some of our lands in basins that people weren't coming to the table with from the five-year program, and I'm talking about a lot of the basins in interior Alaska. We felt the five-year program works very well in certain areas of the North Slope and the Cook Inlet, and so those have been excluded from exploration licensing, and we'll get to the specifics of that in just a minute. All the pieces that I'm going to or almost all the pieces I'm going to describe today are linked. In other words, it's going to be very difficult to pick up one piece of the bill and look at it and say, well, I could change this. Because when you put it back into the bill, you'll find that something else doesn't quite fit with it. So I'd like, if possible, to just keep in your mind that when we did this, and I'll be talking about individual things, but you'll sort of have to think about all of it at once, and I'll try to continue to remind you of that and try to talk to it in that way. Okay. If there's no questions to start off with, I'll go through. Yes.
Can you hold just a second, Senator Sharp?
In that context, Mr. Chairman, how do you want to have questions? Do you want to wait till we get all the way through, or do you want to let the progression take its normal course?
Well, I'd just as soon have the questions at, you know, near the time where you talk about it. I think it'd be easier. If that will that upset your progression?
Okay. No. I hope not. I'll try to keep it moving.
Just signal if you if you wanted, and then maybe when you're ready to move on to another maybe major point, then you can let us know and we can kind of
see
if we have any questions right then.
I'll start out with the geographic restrictions, which is the first thing in the box on the little two-page table. Again, in the beginning bill, the way that it was introduced by the governor, most land in the state was available for exploration licensing. There were certain restrictions. In committee, both in this committee and in finance, I believe, certain changes were made. So the land north of the Umiut baseline, and you should have a map that looks like this, that will show you where the Umiut baseline is and, in fact, what it's excluded. And portions of the Cook Inlet, and again, you should have a second map with a little box drawn around it that shows which lands are excluded. And you'll notice there are some lease sale numbers on there. We also excluded areas that were coming up for lease under the oil and gas, five-year oil and gas leasing schedule. As I said, that goes forward. But we decided that we would hold off on exploration licensing in those areas until they had actually been held under the five-year program. You'll notice the numbers are slightly different under the committee substitute and the October 25th draft. That just is the realization that sales 57 and 77 have now been held.
I have a question.
Senator Salo.
On the map of the Kenai Peninsula, is the area in the box excluded?
Yes.
And then what about this plan does not apply to offshore anyway, right?
It would apply to any offshore areas that were included, yes, and some of those offshore areas that were, most of that that is excluded as you go south from that box is, in fact, federal land. Those are federal waters.
Well, the box doesn't close itself, so how because is it to know if that's excluded or included?
You have to look at the sort of complicated line that draws that box where state waters and federal waters change. Almost all the land, all the water as you go south from there is federal water. I would have a better definition because of the scale of this map, but it would be, you could apply it to state waters, and again, the state waters would be the 3-mile rind around the land, and the rest of that water is almost, as you go into Chillicothe Straits, for example, is almost all federal water, except for the state part, which is 3 miles from shore.
Do you have a good map that we can just have available to members? When we bring this to the floor, I think it may be good to have a resource like that. If you can, showing state waters, federal waters.
I'll get you a map at a better scale.
Okay. Further questions? I have a couple of questions here. I may have brought this up before. I don't remember. Maybe you can refresh my memory. We established the limit at the Umiat baseline. I think the original intent was that would be between the Canning and the Colville, and yet just establishing it at the Umiat excludes other areas north of there from exploration licensing. Was that our intent, or originally, or that the rest of that part of the coastal plain, I guess it is, that would not be available?
As I recall discussion, Senator Lehman, we tried to pick a latitude line that was roughly 69 north. You know, we wanted to keep the foothills open because of their underexplored nature, if you like, and the fact that they haven't been looked at, and the leasing program had not proven extremely popular there. And it was a good way, I think, for exploration licensing. And somehow we wanted to keep off the Colville Delta and places like that. So as a matter of convenience, you might say for oil and gas and for a division of land that put the lease sales together, the maps together, they picked the Umiat baseline because of just the way our lease sale program works. It's just a physical delimiter that we use quite often to base our lease sales on. But it was the intent to cover it from side to side.
Sea to shining sea.
Yes.
Or were you ready to go on to relinquishment?
Yes. Okay. Unless there's no further questions.
I just have one more on page 2 of the Senate bill that we had on the floor. Lines 23 through 27 that have, there's points 1 and 2 that have certain restrictions on the lease. Though I see that those are not included in the proposed, the October 25th draft.
I don't have that copy of that in front of me. Was that the underexplored?
Yes.
Okay. We talked about that, and in the original bill, when you go right back to the beginning, thank you, that made sense. But the more you look at those words, and you realize what is insufficient or undocumented geological and geophysical information. I think what we've done is taken the state, said, you can't do it here, and you can't do it here, but why muddy the water with this language? It doesn't really make any sense. It's up to the company, really, to decide what's undocumented or unknown. Different people have different levels of awareness. We felt this language was more harmful than anything else. It just didn't serve any purpose. We had made the restrictions, we had divided the land up what we thought was proper, and we took that language out because it just didn't make any sense anymore.
Okay, thanks. And I just want to note for those who aren't here that Senator Halford has joined us. Senator Adams.
But isn't that what this piece of legislation is after, that type of land to be explored? And that's why the commissioner has placed that particular language on page 2, lines 23, 24, and 25.
Yes, Senator Adams, and I think if, in fact, you had included, if you took away the geographic restrictions and left it the way it was, you would have to say something like that to get away from Prudhoe, to get away from Kaparik, to get away from the developing fields. But now we've excluded those by definition. We've said they're off limits. If you look at what's left on the table, so to speak, if you take Umiat Baseline North off, you take the box of the Cook Inlet off, everything else that's left fits that definition. There really isn't anything on there anymore that anybody, I think, would say, oh, yeah, I know all about that.
Okay. Senator Sable.
Thank you. In regards to Senator Lehman's request for a map that mm-hmm. gives us a better idea of what's there and what isn't there in the Kenai Peninsula, I would appreciate that for all of the state in terms of what's federal land, what state land this applies to.
Okay.
I have never seen, you know, a real good map since we've been talking about these geographic lines.
Now that we've filed our land, finally with BLM after 35 years, I guess it would be appropriate to get the final status map, and we can put the restrictions. I'll try to get that for you. That would be a real good map to have that on.
Okay. Please proceed.
Okay. Now, this is, again, as I said, I would remind you, and I'll remind you now, that we're coming into the point where I'm going to talk about relinquishment, and I'm going to talk about bonding. These are linked, and they can get a little bit complicated, but I'll try to work through this. Relinquishment. In the original bill, there was no relinquishment provision, although if you look at the programs that are used around the world, and again, this exploration licensing, which in other countries is often called concessions, it's used in over 100 countries worldwide, similar, not the same. They are all a little bit different, but a lot of them have relinquishment provisions. And again, in committee, a relinquishment provision was added, as you can read here, where you relinquish 25% of the license area at the end of the fourth year, and then an additional 10% of the original area each year thereafter. In other words, if you had a 100,000-acre license, at the end of the fourth year, you would relinquish 25,000 acres. And then 10% of the 100,000 each year thereafter for the term of the license. In the discussions with the companies between sessions, this was, if not the most hated provision, it was certainly in the top of the list. We worked on how relinquishment should work and why it should work. It's not intuitively obvious why you'd have relinquishments at all. I mean, you might think, well, why would you want to do that? I mean, if they're going to give the land back, what in the hell are you going to do with it after you've got it? They said they didn't want it, but that isn't the point. The point is that the company, when they select their area for licensing, is very unlikely to pick the boundaries of an oil field. They're picking a large area to explore. That's what this program is all about, to get this land into a person who has the money and the inclination, or a company that has the money and the inclination, to get out in the ground and do some work and get the money into the ground. But as they move through their exploration phase of their in the license area, certain areas are going to be determined by them to be, well, this is moose patch. This is not something we want to explore any further. And we felt that the state then should be able to relicense that or give somebody else the opportunity to have it. It's been proven before that one person's moose pasture can be another person's discovery, just different ways of thinking. But this particular provision, again, was not the companies reacted badly to it. So we tried to work with them and to find a way that we could reach some common ground. In the October 25th draft, here's how it works. You have to do 25% of your work commitment in the first 4 years. That's one of the provisions. Now, that is not the relinquishment provision. Remember, I'm talking about these great linkages again. 25%, whatever your work commitment is, you have to do 25% in four years, four field seasons, or you lose your license. You're dead. You're gone. However, if you do 50% of your work, which now you don't have to do this, if you do 50% of your work commitment the first 4 years, there's no relinquishments, none. You get to keep all the acreage. But you've put half your money into the ground in 4 years. This is the royalty owner speaking, saying more sooner. If you don't do 50%, you have to do 25%, but if you do something in between, then you relinquish 25% and then 10% of the remaining acreage each year thereafter, which is a little bit different than the original committee substitute Senate bill. So if you do 50% in 4 years, there's no relinquishments. If you don't do that, then it's 25% in the fourth year and then 10% of the remaining acreage each year thereafter. In other words, 100,000 acres the fourth year, 25%, 25,000 acres, but then 10% of 75,000 and so on for the term of the license, for however many years the license may be. And there's one more provision. The maximum relinquishment is 50%. You never have to relinquish more than 50% of your original licensed area. Okay? Keep that. Okay.
Sarah Salo?
Thank you. Well, I have a couple of questions there. The original relinquishment provision didn't offer only the licensee to relinquish land, but allowed the state to remove land from the section. Isn't that true?
No, not exactly. The licensee had the opportunity to identify the land that would be relinquished at the end of the 4 years. Failing that, then the state would help them out and take it from, we would take the 25% that we wanted removed. So the company would have the option to do it, and I would say in 100% of the cases would exercise that opportunity.
Okay. And then another question, which is loosely related, but our original reason there was that we didn't want land tied up and no exploration taking place, right? So do you feel that the compromise reach still protects that state interest?
Absolutely. And that's a very important question, a very important point, and something we discussed a lot. And again, I'm going to keep saying this. I know you're getting tired of hearing, but remember that everything here is linked, and some of these other things are linked to this. But I feel that by providing a company the opportunity to do 50% of the work in 4 years and having no relinquishment is a very big carrot. And it's a win-win, a true win-win in my mind, to get a company to spend a lot of their money up front, which is not traditionally done. In our current leasing program, I think a lot of you know that are familiar with it, a lot of the work gets done toward the end of the lease period. But if they do their 50% up front, they have a real benefit then by not having to relinquish any land. So I really feel it's a benefit. It also helps them out a little bit with the bonding, which I'll get to in a minute.
Any other questions?
Are you
there?
Go
ahead.
Okay. Bonding. If this wasn't the top issue, it was certainly in the top three, along with relinquishments. In the original Senate bill, bonding was for the total commitment on a dollar-for-dollar basis, and you forfeited anything you didn't do. Okay, what does that mean? If you had a $50 million work commitment, you would have to bond for $50 million for the term of your license, whatever it was. Let's say you did $20 million worth of work. You thought, oh, this place is terrible. This is awful. I've made a terrible mistake. I don't want to do any more work here. You would have to pay the state $30 million. You still owed that money. So that was a bad thing for any company, I think. But it was the size of the bond, the numbers, the dollars, if you like, was a real disincentive to smaller companies. And it put them in a real competitive disadvantage with the gigantic companies. I'm not suggesting what we came up with gives the smallest companies a dollar-for-dollar competitive advantage with the largest oil companies in the world. But it would give them the opportunity, at least, to play their own game. They could play whatever they needed to play, form joint ventures or whatever. So in committee, in the Senate, a lot of talking. And what came out was an annual bond that was based on the year's work commitment. Now, let me see how I can do this. What that means is, the company that won the license, the right to have the license, would have had to have put together a work commitment based on a certain number of things being done in each particular year. Let's say Company A would have wanted to do a well in year one. No. 100 miles of seismic in year one, and a well in year two or something like that. Another company might want to do 1,000 miles of aeromag or some other, you know, remote sensing geophysical, then some geochemistry along with the seismic program, and get well in year three. And you begin to see the complexity of how do you decide what a program is worth. But let's assume that you could do that. If you could, then in each year, if in year one you had a requirement to do 1,000 miles of seismic and something else, and you put a value on that, you'd have to bond for 10% of it. It gives the commissioner, besides giving the commissioner a tremendous amount of heartburn and a lot of just pure work, and I think the opportunity for mischief, the opportunity also for lawsuits to be generated, because you can't compare these things. You simply can't decide what a well is worth in 1 year and a bunch of seismic data versus something almost like that, but not quite, a couple of years later. And you can imagine the mix you get into. We tried to come up with something that was only in dollars, something we could compare only in dollars. And we came up with a bond formula. And the way the bond formula works is that you take the amount of your commitment, let's say it's $50 million.
And you've got to bond that all up front?
No. No.
Isn't what that says in here?
No.
And then you reduce it as you...
Right.
The bonding requirement as you do your work.
Right. Well, let's look at a bond in the first year for a $50 million program in a 10-year license. Okay, you've committed $50 million over 10 years. What is the bond going to be in the first year? Okay, the bond formula says it's $50 million minus the amount you've spent so far, which is nothing. You haven't started yet. You haven't done anything. You just, what am I going to bond for my first year? And I divide it by 10 years. Your bond in year one is $5 million. Let's say you do $5 million worth of work in the first year. Your work commitment remains at $50 million. You do $5 million worth of work. So you've done $50 million worth of work. You have a $50 million commitment. You've done $5 million worth of work that first year. You have 9 years left, so it's 50 minus 5 is 45 divided by 9 is 5 million. So that's your bond for the next year, and so on. If you remember what I said, as you go back, there's a small benefit. This isn't really a big deal, but if you do a lot of your work early, your bonding in your later years becomes less. But the bond formula, I think, is important that you're not comparing apples and oranges in an exploration program. On the other hand, you're not telling people what specifically to do. You're saying who's going to spend the most money, who's willing to spend the most money, and the bonding requirement, we think, along with the other things we've added, are fair. It gives the smaller companies an opportunity to play. I'm not ever going to say, in this committee or any other committee, that it gives the smallest companies the opportunity to compete on an equal basis with the largest companies in the world. It just isn't ever going to happen. But I think it gives the small companies an opportunity to play in the program, to find their own niche, or to put a deal together with a reasonable amount of bonding, and the state is still protected. There were arguments to have no bonding. I mean, there's an argument that says, hey, wait a minute. You've said that you want to put this money in the ground, and now you're asking me for a bond. If you don't have any bonding, then you'll never get the bidding right. If you have no responsibility to be financially responsible, well, you can bid anything you want. I mean, why not bid $100 or $500 million, you know, and win? Because there's nobody holding your feet to the fire. It really makes a mess of the whole program. There has to be some financial responsibility. What we tried to do is to find, I won't call it a middle ground, but we tried to find a compromise along with some of the other features of the bill, of the program, that would work. And we feel that this works. And again, it takes some of the responsibility out of both the commissioner's hands and the Division of Oil and Gas, where you're weighing a whole bunch of programs and saying, okay, you've bid the most money, you win, the license is yours. And that, if there's no question, if I could just do one more thing, in the competitive bidding, then allows you to do that, provides a mechanism for how you get this amount of money onto the table. Now, in the original bill, it was an oral outcry. Some companies think that's the best method. Other companies think it's a bad method because it's hard. Not everybody can be empowered to go above a certain level. It's sort of like being at an auction, and you reach a certain level, you go, oh, I got to make a phone call. We felt that the sealed bid was the proper method, and in the end, all companies agreed to it. Okay, now I've covered a lot of ground here just in a minute. Have I gotten the bonding idea fairly well across?
You've explained it very well, and I do have a question I want to ask on it, but I'll let Senator Adams go ahead.
Yes. On the bonding capabilities and requirements, I just don't know, and I would like to note it, that I would like to see us look into this, and I don't know if we're playing playing field with the wealthiest versus the not-so-wealthiest, or the big versus small oil companies, and I just don't know yet the net effect of this change that is made between the original bill and what is made here. It's one I'm not sure of. And I just want to note that I think we should have a debate before we pass the section up, you know, after the work session. So
it appears to me, Ken, that the bonding, the change will be an increase in the bonding expenditure. We previously had it at 10% of that year's work commitment, which would mean that year's work commitment would have to be defined, and you know, your division would be more integrally involved in it, and that was one of the complaints. And I tend to agree with that complaint. I guess speaking for myself, I felt that 10% was probably enough to hold the feet to the fire, so, you know, because nobody even wants to lose that much. Mm-hmm. It's still a lot of money. I may have been wrong in that assessment, but I don't know that I am so wrong as to go from 10% of that year's work commitment essentially to 100%. I understand it's not of that year's work commitment, but averaging out, it will be that mm-hmm. way. So we're essentially going from 10% to 100% bonding again. And that probably is, well, that and relinquishment are the two areas where I probably have to think it through just a bit more. And go ahead and maybe speak from your experience and what the discussion was.
I would have to disagree that it's 100%, because in the original bill, it truly was 100%, where you'd have to have $50 million under bond for the entire program. But here, you never have to expose yourself to that number. You're exposed to a $5 million bond in that first year under the bonding formula, whereas if you go back way back to the beginning, you would have had been bonded for $50 million, and I think it's quite a difference. As you say, 10% of your yearly work commitment, but I don't know what that commitment might be. It could have been unlikely to be $50 million a year, I would say. But I think you need to have this level of financial responsibility to protect the state's interest. We're giving away wrong. Don't ever say that, Ken. We are providing an awful lot of land. And I think we need to have some financial responsibility. And I don't think this is an unreasonable financial responsibility to explore in some of our interior basins. And I don't believe, in my own mind, you're not holding them at 100% level. You're just not, because again, that's the way the program started. And they're not having to carry these huge numbers forward. They're able to carry over some portion, and it's amortized over the term of the license period. So,
well, I didn't want to misspeak. I knew it wasn't 100% of the total work commitment, mm-hmm. but I said on average is approximately 100% of the annualized work commitment, and I'd say that probably is still a legitimate assessment. But I saw another hand earlier. Was it Senator Sharp?
We went over this a little fast, but back to the addition of the 20,000 acre minimum.
We're not there yet.
Haven't quite got there.
No, I thought he was going.
We're going down this
sheet.
Down this spreadsheet.
Yeah, okay. I got a markup.
Can you wait? Can you wait till we get there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll hold back.
Senator Salo?
I have a question under the competitive bidding. You did cover that section.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Could you explain a little bit more about the allowed expenditures? I know that we discussed that somewhat with the substitute last year, but what does that mean?
Okay. In the most, I'll try to do it in simple terms. A smaller company, whether real or imagined, is thought to be less bureaucratic, can provide a service more efficiently and perhaps less expensively. So what we've tried to do is to only allow real expenses and not overhead. A giant company has a giant overhead, a small company has a small overhead. We wanted to be sure that those overhead costs were not included in this program, and it was the true cost of doing business. I still think a smaller company may be a little bit more flexible, a little more nimble, and may have, a smaller cost than a gigantic company. But we've tried, by separating those two costs out, to get rid of the real fluff cost. Any overhead expenses are not allowed. That's the basis of that provision.
Ken, on page 3, under direct exploration expenditure, in our original language, we had the words, including seismic, magnetic, and gravity surveys, and in the proposed draft, those words are deleted. Is that an intentional deletion? If so, is that just superfluous language?
No. We wanted to not make lists in law, and to say that there's a lot of different things that people can do now, different techniques in geochemistry. There's new technologies in remote sensing. We'd like to do that in regulation. We'd like to say that you can use technology, but we'll tell you what they are in some detail in regulation. I don't believe it belongs in or needs to be in the law.
Yeah. Well, I thought that's what it was, and I agree with that. If that's what it is, and
that's what it is.
I just want to make sure I have that. Proceed.
Okay. What am I up to? We're up to acreage chargeability and some related issues that Senator Sharp just mentioned. In the original bill, the licensed area would not be more than 500,000 acres, and then all or part would be converted to 30,000-acre leases. Back up just a little bit. As you probably know, our state leases are 5,760 acres. They're 3 by 3 miles. That's the maximum size lease that we can lease. So we were actually changing that in a sense. We were going from a license area of 500,000 acres to these sort of super leases. Excuse me. In committee, we kept the 500,000-acre maximum, but said, no, let's go to standard leases from the license to lease transition. In other words, after you fulfilled your work commitment, you will take some portion, or all if you like, from license to lease, but they'll come out in little 3 by 3 mile squares. Again, there's a lot of discussion about this, but the companies felt this was by far the best way to do it, not to change the size of those. And I think it really doesn't make a lot of difference. Oh, I should mention that $3 annual rent was in the original bill. Again, this is after you've gone to lease. For those of you who don't know, our rental now starts at $1, goes up 50 cents a year for 5 years to a maximum of $3. So we're just kicking it in at the highest level of $3 an acre for the rental. Now, in the committee in the October 25th draft, we made one, which I'll call a small change. Licenses are now not less than 20,000 nor more than 500,000. Why this? We talked a little bit about it and started thinking that, well, a bit of fear that people would misuse this program. That I tell you the truth, I actually changed this because I didn't get the phone call, but one of my staff people got a phone call who wanted to add a very small piece of acres to one of our lease sales. It was like 50 acres or something, and we just could not accommodate him. It was too late in the process. He said to this woman that, well, I'll just get an exploration license over it, and hung up. And a light bulb went up off in my head. We could be besieged with requests for exploration licenses for 20 acres or 100 acres. Remember that all the public notice provisions are part of this program. You simply can't do a best interest finding on a very small parcel. So we started to talk, again, with industry. What's a reasonable size for something that could be explored where you could reasonably expect it to be big enough to develop? And we picked 20,000 acres. That's not a sacred number. The other thing is that the commissioner really can deny any application. So this is not, I don't think anybody really has any, I'm probably the person that has the most heartburn over the very small acreages. I'd be afraid of a commissioner being inundated with very small requests that he would have to deny, or she would have to deny. And I think it makes sense to have a floor. I think 20,000 acres is reasonable. I would guess in a remote basin, again, where this program is focused, that you're not going to develop something with a smaller number of acres than that. And certainly, don't forget, you're starting with that number. And probably it's going to get smaller than that because you go from license to lease. You're just probably not going to lease everything that you've licensed. The license is the opportunity to look, to take the big look. The lease transition is the opportunity to pick out the good stuff.
Senator Sharp, did you want to follow up on that? Are you satisfied with the answer?
I guess basically what you're saying is arbitrarily you think 20,000 under is sort of a nuisance value for processing.
Yes. In simple language, that's exactly right. I don't think that you can really...
30 sections of land.
Mm-hmm. But again, the license is the area that you're exploring, the area that you're taking a look at, and the area that we have to do the best interest finding over. And I'm not trying to be selfish here. I just think there is a point of diminishing returns that the state just can't throw a lot of people at a best interest finding for very, very small parcels of land. We could usually add pieces of land to lease sales, but again, in some areas it's just not possible. We've done it before. We've done it routinely.
Senator Sable?
Well, the question I have relates to the $3 rental rate.
Mm-hmm.
And comparing this to the lease program, isn't that a deal? Because you're going to pay that only on the land that you want to lease, which I assume is going to be productive,
mm-hmm.
As compared to paying it on a whole parcel that you would lease. So, I mean, you explained the difference in the structure, but it's still a deal, isn't it?
No, I don't see it as a deal. Quite frankly, this bill is we don't make very much money from rent. less than 1%. This bill is meant to get people out exploring new land and making discoveries. We make less than 1% of our income off of rents and bonuses. Whether that number should be $5 or some other number, I don't know. We took it at the maximum of what we have provided in statute now and did not want to raise it. And I don't have a better answer than that. The rentals and any of the little fees that are in here are incidental to this whole program. This program is meant for people to go out and look at areas that we've just not had any interest in the five-year program. I know it's not a very satisfactory answer, but that truly is the answer.
I just want to note, Senator Salo, that there's on the next page, the application fee for the license is on the total acreage, and that is not to exceed $1 per acre. So there will be a fee initially on all of the acreage, and
true.
Then this license fee of $3 an acre would be only on that part that would be leased.
Right.
I think I need to do the research outside of here on that. I mean, your answer on it, it's only 1%. What is, in dollars, about what is that? I mean, even very rough is fine.
I want to say it was 17 million rentals last year. I think I can find that number, and I may be able to find it while I'm poking around, but that's the number that comes to mind out of, you know, the $1 billion in royalties and round numbers, $1 billion in taxes. The bonuses, of course, changed. We actually had a pretty good bonus year last year because of the Cook Inlet sale. We took in $60-odd million. But on average, with the exception of the exceptional sales that were back in the 70s, the Prudhoe Bay lands and things, which were $900 million, those don't happen anymore. And as you all know, we've had several sales that nobody's come to at all. So, of course, you get no bonus money there at all.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You don't feel that the 20,000-acre minimum would possibly be an arbitrary situation if a developer put together a deal on private land and adjoining state land that they might want to complete a package on? 20,000 is small, I guess, in many minds, but with the crazy quilt patterns, we have land ownership anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's not too far-fetched to where a developer might put a package together with private land and state land, and which leads to another question of determining where the investment is made.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at some of the maps I've seen, it is a crazy quilt.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And there's a lot of areas that's less than 6-7 miles mm-hmm. between private land.
But I think also you still get back to doing the background, the best interest finding, and all that for a very small piece of land. But again, the commissioner always has the ability to turn down any deal.
But he can't accept one less than 20,000 if this will go through.
True. Yes, that is true. We've already done the next one, the application fee. It started at $1 an acre. Then it was not more than $1 an acre, and it's still not more than $1 an acre, and just as set by the commissioner. The minimum work commitments we've discussed, and again, in the original bill, you had to fulfill the work commitment by the end of the license term, or you had to forfeit some of your bonding, as we've explained. In the committee substitute, there was a yearly work commitment subject to review, and again, that relates to bonding. And now you have to complete 25% of the work commitment by the end of the fourth year, or you lose your license. The next two issues, we've already covered the lease rental, which is the last one. The next two issues, Title 46 financial responsibility and the 90-day provision, are items that were not in the governor's original bill and are not in the October 25th draft. The Title 46 financial responsibility was added in, and again, I don't remember if it was oil and gas or finance.
Finance, I believe.
Okay. And it lowered the financial responsibility for an onshore exploration facility from $5 million to $1 million, and there was quite a lot of debate on that. This is, again, a Title 46 DEC provision, and we've only removed it from the October 25th draft because it was not something the companies, well, the companies could discuss it, but there was something that I was not personally going to discuss with them, the pros and cons or the merits or whatever. I don't work under Title 46. I work under Title 38. Having said that, the next provision was something that we added, of oil and gas, or DNR. In Title 38, there's a provision that says that you have to hold the lease sale within 90 days of the quarter in which it is scheduled. And we drafted language to remove that provision. It was added, and again, this way predates me, but it solved the problem that I've often called the evil commissioner problem. If you had an evil commissioner, he or she may have held the lease sale before this provision was put in, could have held a lease sale hostage in saying, well, I'm not going to hold this lease sale, you know, until you do this for me or whatever. In fact, that never happened, and the provision was added, but it has always been used against us by various groups that would try to push the 90-day envelope, push us off the schedule, which meant we have to go back to the beginning of the loop and cycle through. But we took that out of this bill, again, in the draft that I presented today, because we felt it just cleaned the bill back to exploration licensing again. The commissioner or the governor may or may not address some Title 38 issues in separate legislation, but we felt it was responsible to take out everything that wasn't exploration licensing and bring it back to its what it was meant to be from the beginning. And that, I think, covers the main points. I've worked with several of your staff members to clean up just some of the commas and the semicolons and trying to get things in the right place and ugly language, what have you. But I believe I've covered most of the changes.
Okay, Senator Adams.
Yeah, the change between theirs and ours was in Section 3. It had to do with the leasing and conditions. And why did you remove it from the original bill?
Again,
that's the 90-day?
That's the 90-day provision. And we took it out because we felt that we want to take everything out of the exploration licensing bill that wasn't exploration licensing. And this really isn't. We took out the Title 46 provisions and this and decided in this case, at least, in the Title 38 provisions, we would address them separately.
Any other questions? Comments from committee members?
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Mr. Faison, your deputy director has done an admirable job of going through these. I don't know if you intended to participate or observe, but just acknowledge your presence. And if you want to participate, you're welcome to join us at the table. And Mr. Boyd, you're welcome to stay here near the microphone.
Okay.
That is what I had intended to go through in terms of the work session and getting us familiar with the proposed changes. And I know there are people in the audience who some have come in from Anchorage and there are some on teleconference who may wish to comment, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to do so. I just ask that you keep your remarks fairly brief in the interest of our being able to get several people in the next few minutes.
Senator, you're not going to pass this bill out to the committee.
No,
right?
No. I'll tell you what. We don't have possession of the bill. It is on this. It's on the secretary's desk. Our intent is that we deal with this bill on the floor of the Senate. It's being held under reconsideration. It hasn't been referred to the Oil and Gas Committee, but it's to bring this information to the other members so we can deal with it on the floor.
Okay. My concerns have been with the. Page 2, lines 23, 24, that we discussed earlier in our first one, bonding, and I prefer their title. If we get to those particular points, when we get to the floor on this piece of legislation.
You prefer their title?
Yes.
Well, yeah. They took out those sections that were deleted and took them out from the title.
A broad title.
Oh, okay, yeah. Capital budget? Senator Salem?
So the question I have is, other than today, will there be any more opportunity for
public testimony.
I don't know. I hadn't planned on it in oil and gas. If there's a need for it and a request for it, if, you know, I'd certainly be happy to hear public testimony on it if we feel that's necessary. For this committee, Senator Halford?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest a format be that, you go ahead and draft an amendment, and if members of the committee want to amend the amendment or in any way run that through the committee process, that amendment will then be offered on the floor to the bill. But that way you've got a committee consideration of the new compromise, which is basically an amendment to something we've been talking about for a while. And I also don't mind that. I think it's a good idea to get the explanation out here on the table and let it sit for a little bit of time, at least a few days, so that if people do have, you know, major concerns, they can go find out, look them up, see what's going on. We can still get the bill out in fairly short order that way. But if there are amendments that would be proposed to essentially a committee amendment, then we should go ahead and deal with them here. That's the best way to keep the bill moving and yet have all the protections of treating it as almost a new idea.
I certainly did not intend to limit or exclude any public testimony. We've taken a lot so far, and I don't want to belabor that point, but if there's a need to take additional testimony, we certainly can. Even though we don't have the bill technically in our committee, we certainly can hear testimony on it and share that information with the rest. Is there a sign-up sheet here? And, you know, if so, could I have it? I'd see if there's anybody. Is there anybody here in the audience who cares to testify on this? Mr. Finley?
Yeah, is it your pleasure, Mr. Chairman?
Why don't you come up and, if you can, right here by the microphone, just state your name, who you represent, and proceed.
Yeah. My name is George Findling. I work for ARCO Alaska as the Government and Public Relations Manager. I just wanted to give you a few comments. We, of course, support completely the October 25th DNR version of this bill as a strong frontier licensing bill. And I particularly wanted to point out strengths in relating to how this provides a level playing field for potential competitors in the bidding process. And I really see 6 points. I'll make them very quickly and close. First is this bonding formulation, to me, strikes a balance that's appropriate amongst the variety of interests and provides really equal financial footing for bidders and really solid protection for the state's interest. And I see the state's interest here is getting work done in return for this providing of land for exploration. The second main reason it provides a level playing field is that leases are achieved only after the entire work commitment is complete. And this minimizes the chances of speculation. Third is that the bonding and relinquishment together really provide incentives to get the work done early and expeditiously. The bonding again, as the fourth point, the bonding again allows the licensee the maximum flexibility to pursue the work program that makes sense to them. Fifth is that the licensing supplements and also dovetails into the proven state leasing system. And this really provides licensees with a fair amount of certainty as to how the process is going to work after the license is completed. And finally, I think the winning bond bid in any competition that's sealed is selected based upon the objective standards of total amount bid. And I think that really lends a level of objectivity that's important. So I just would close and say, again, we are in complete support of the October 25th version. Be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Finley, I do have a question. Let's say that, you know, we work on this a little longer, and some members of the committee want to offer some amendments or some changes. And, you know, it's kind of, like a balloon. You know, when you push here, it comes out here. I would assume with your company, as perhaps the case with other participants, you know, there's a balance here, and there's only so much room, and then maybe your enthusiastic support for this becomes less enthusiastic, or perhaps even goes the other way. Do you have kind of defined sidewalls, if you will, of what those limits are, or is this pretty much you recognize this as being a finely crafted piece of work that probably shouldn't be, in your opinion at least, shouldn't be changed too much?
Mm-hmm. Yes, let me mix my metaphors. I've heard it stated this agreement we have is kind of like glass, in that it's really strong, and yet it doesn't have a lot of stretch. So to me, making amendments in the bill based on what I observed in the process of coming to consensus could very easily cause that consensus to go away. The other metaphor I'll mix in here is glue. To me, the bonding is the glue that holds this bill together. It, as Ken mentioned very eloquently, there are a lot of things interrelate here, and one of the most common in here is the bonding, in that it allows a lot of things to happen. It allows exploration to be done freely without over amounts of review. It allows the financial risks to be the same for all bidders. It levels the playing field. And to me, compromising the bonding is an area that really runs a risk of compromising the overall consensus on this bill.
Thank you. Any other questions, Mr. Finley? Thank you. Okay. We have online, I understand, in Barrow, Mr. Tom Lohman, and in Fairbanks, Mr. Cliff Berglund. If I can go to Barrow first. Tom Lohman, if you'd go ahead and proceed with your comments on the proposed or amendments that have been proposed to the Senate for the Senate Bill 150.
The simple answer, Tom, is that all the things you have available to you under Title 38 and everything else is on the same has the same terms and conditions. You know, very little of this, in fact, is offshore. But all the public process, all the processes you have under the five-year program, you have available under exploration licensing. Those provisions don't change. You bet.
Thank you. Mr. Berglund in Fairbanks? Is anybody online in Fairbanks? Could we have the moderator check the microphone?
Bert, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I hear you, Cliff.
Are we ready?
We're ready.
As far as I'm concerned, this bill should never see the light of day. It is not a bill, as is stated, to an act relating to the exploration and production of oil and gas and related hydrocarbons, to oil and gas exploration licenses, and to oil and gas leases in certain areas of the state. This is a bill simply to tie up all of the states, or most of the states' best potential oil and gas lands. The companies that want this bill are, number one, laying off thousands of people in the state, taking their exploration dollars and their jobs overseas to places that they like better. The Department of Natural Resources stated policy by several employees is to get not to have independence in the state of Alaska. And if anybody wants to ask, I can tell you who the employees are and they can ask them. They do not want any independence. Now, in the last 30 days, and you can check with the ARCO representative, ARCO has lost its autonomy in Alaska to select and drill the wells, various wells in different places. They now have to get cleared through their Houston office. not encourage oil and gas exploration. And I'd like to point out in passing that Prudhoe Bay was discovered with 2,560 acre leases, didn't have any 500,000 acre tracts or anything nearly that big. And we still managed to find the biggest field in the Western Hemisphere with just small leases. There's another problem that I see. The DNR has been sitting on a million mental health trust lands, and by some scheme or another, has kept these people from selecting a million acres that they were promised by the federal government. Now, how do you propose to address that? Are you going to put all these oil companies that are leaving the state with their money ahead of the mental health people who the state legislature and the governor have a sworn trust obligation to? I don't see where this bill should even be considered at this time. The state DNR are sitting on discoveries and have sat on discoveries that have never even been disclosed. They've known of new discoveries, and they have never told the legislators. And I don't know why. The legislators, I guess, are too courteous to ask them how much the state's discovered resources are worth. And somebody made the comment that we're taking in $17 million a year in lease rentals. Well, that isn't too bad considering that we only have about 4 million acres leased out of a potential 700 million acres onshore and offshore. Wouldn't we like to be getting a buck an acre for all the potential oil and gas lands that we have in this state? Wouldn't have to be talking about budget deficits. We wouldn't have to be talking about people to explore. Wouldn't have to be talking about crazy bonding. Every other state in the union gets along on $20,000 bonding, but we have to have $5, $20, $50 million bonds. You wonder why there are no independents here, like there are in every other state? Because we have goofy regulations. There are ways to make the state very prosperous, but to turn it all over in 500,000 acre chunks to a bunch of major oil companies who are leaving here does not seem to me the best way to do it. And I would like to have anybody ask me any questions that's interested. And furthermore, one more thing, you're going to turn all these licensing deals over to one person, the head of the Division of Oil and Gas. And there's no control. Anyway, I don't want to make this too long. Anybody can ask any questions. That bill should be trashed, because it is trash.
Thank you, Mr. Berglund, for your comments. I don't know that I heard any specific comments on the proposed amendments that we were discussing today, but I certainly heard your comments on the bill as a whole. And I'm not going to try to respond to everything you said, but I just will say that on the mental health trust lands issue, those are in the process of, or that trust is in the process of being reconstituted. And there's work going on now with DNR and the Attorney General's office, and the mental health folks, and I know that it has taken an awful long time.
Could I respond to that? Health people, if they have any legal advice at all, are going to likely demand the revenue from some of the new discovered oil fields. They have a right to that. And I wonder how you intend to handle that. Plus, 1 million acres of land that they are entitled to. And if their lawyers do not get some of this revenue, then I think if I were the mental health trust people, I'd get some new lawyers. Which means the state is not going to have as much money.
And
I would like to go through this bill like Mr. Boyd did, page by page, but I don't have the time, and you people, you know, will not give me the time, but it's a bad bill. Like I say, it's trash, and it should be trash.
If you could provide comments page by page, I'd certainly be happy to take those, and you can fax those to us, or mail them, or you could call our oil and gas office at 465-3711 to call your comments, or fax them to 465-3810.
Well, if people don't listen to my comments, their legislators here won't listen to them, and they're very appropriate. And, like I say, this bill, at this time, should never see the light of day.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Questions? Is there anybody else in Juneau who wishes to comment or testify on the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 150? If not, I did not have anybody else on the teleconference network signed up to testify. Is there anybody on the network who wishes to testify? Hearing none, that will conclude our work session. And just for information of the members, we will prepare amendments along the lines of those proposed here for further discussion and consideration by committee members. And when we're satisfied with those, the plan is then to advance those to the floor and for consideration on the floor of the Senate. And that will be our plan. We'll distribute those to you for anybody listening here, and if you care to offer any testimony on this, or if you feel that additional public hearings are warranted, we will take that in consideration. Hearing no further business, that will end our work session.